What is up, everybody? Welcome back to the Dynasty Rankings Podcast. I'm your host, Nate List. You can find me on Twitter at An Outraged Jew. And with me, of course, is Alexander McKenzie. You can find him on Twitter at Jacked Up on Mountain Dew. Alexander, wild week of football. Lot of movement in the markets, as we've seen. We talk about this on some previous episodes, and we're seeing it a lot in sort of the discourse on social media, just sort of the flippant nature that Dynasty gamers have strapped to their hip suddenly over the past year or 2 years, where one bad game from one player elicits the most overreactionary response, and we have Dynasty gamers running and heading for the hills because said asset had one poor performance despite the fact that he had three or four other really good games. Are you seeing this more and more in the market? Like, are you seeing it in the data, and are you seeing it sort of with the social interaction?
I think like it's a myriad of things, like you said. I think you can see it within the data. I think wide receivers have stuck to being more consistent to top 24 finishes within PPR formats. You know, while like over the last 5 years, there have been more running backs within the top 12. There's like a 13.5% difference. So they have slightly outperformed, but the consistency, the gap between running backs and wide receivers in top 24 finishes closes with like a 6.3% difference, but they show more consistency at the level where like nine wide receivers posting top 24 finishes in the four of the last seasons, five seasons compared to six, reaching the same level of consistency. And you can kind of see that like when you look at the positional value to on something like, you know, Fantasy Calc that we've referenced a few times. You know, some of these guys you look at like top five, like Bijan. You know, he's not getting a lot of usage. That's a hot topic right now where, you know, there like what, like two red zone carries with, you know, this year compared to Algiers, like 10 or 12. Christian McCaffrey obviously getting a monster workload, but he's at 27 and a half years old. You got Breece Hall, you know, who's starting to get the volume. He's one of the more solid players at the position, but the offense is not that good. But you kind of look through this list. Etienne is pretty solid now, has solidified his role, but Gibbs is in a committee with Montgomery for, you know, the foreseeable future with that contract. And then Jonathan Taylor kind of got the thorn, you know, a little thorn here with Zach Moss being used heavily in potential committee. I know he had a better game this year with or this week in terms of usage, but some of these guys are not as, they don't feel as sticky at the position. And I think some of these guys who are extremely talented get throttled down by just usage and opinion, where like someone like Jonathan Taylor, like Zach Moss was never going to take his job. And I think really what happens is when you compare like wide receivers and running backs, some of these guys, the talent is evident and they will have, you know, bad weeks because, you know, defenses will adjust to their talent. But some of these other guys will, you know, have boon weeks that may throttle them up. But I think it's evident by the market where, you know, people's opinion of recency bias will jump some of these players up or market them down too much, where the talent is there, but the value is not there because the consistency is not there, if that makes sense. I think that wide receivers feel more sticky now because the consistency over time, and I think we talked about this pretty in detailed manner about 2 months ago before the season started.
Yeah, I mean we were prophetic with this in the beginning, but I mean, and you're right. Like you go through some of these players here, and it's like you and I just talked about this. Devon Achane is probably the most Achan. I don't know. I'm gonna keep getting wrong.
I think it's Achane. I think it's Achane, but.
Is probably the most fragile player in the top 10 right now. Because I can tell you for a fact, Jahmyr Gibbs, he's already in a committee. So we've resigned ourselves to the idea that no matter what, David Montgomery to some degree is going to be involved. But we've now seen enough from Gibbs to sort of accept that level of talent that we believe was there. So when you see Gibbs as the RB5, despite the fact that David Montgomery exists, you know that the market is saying, look, we know how good he is. We realize there's somebody else here, but we're not going to concession on our belief. Devon Achane, though, on the other hand, as you mentioned, it only takes a handful of games that don't meet expectation, which, by the way, is sky high right now, because he posted that monster performance, and I think he followed it up with borderline 30 fantasy points the next week. But as you had brought up, if Devon Achane has two consecutive games in a row of 7 fantasy points, 9 fantasy points, then maybe he puts up an 11.5. Where does he fall to? Because the problem is the fragility of him is so immense right now that his fall could be enormous. Now, he's already been hurt, right, which was like the big caveat. But again, the reason he is RB7 is because people have since concessioned in their brains, well, if he can do X, then I'm willing to trade off for the undersized running back who, by the way, Raheem Mostert is playing out of his mind right now. So he's also in a committee in many regards. But it's just interesting because, yeah, like you go through this group. Yes, Eckler's 28.5, but he's still punching in multiple touchdowns a game. He's still a target threat. That's a guy that you necessarily like. Kenneth Walker losing some of that workload, as we talked about, efficiency in question. Running back in general, despite the fact that they have a ceiling, it's not a position I want to invest in. It's not a position I want to push the chips in on. They've got a shorter lifespan, higher injury rate. I don't need to tell you guys this. You know this information, but yet you continue to invest, and then you continue to run the other direction when things don't go your way, a la Tony fucking Pollard, who was supposed to be a top 5 back this year, has the backfield to himself, but sometimes this is what happens when a running back is 26, was shielded from a full level of workload and is on a 1-year deal, and now your confidence is absolutely shaken. And he's the RB13 right now in keep trade cut, but as we approach trade deadline, as we approach the end of the year, that number is going to fall a hell of a lot further knowing the contract is in question.
Absolutely. Player like Tony Pollard. I think, again, you brought up Achane, one of these undersized backs. I think an undersized back in somewhat of a three-way committee with Jeff Wilson Jr. and Raheem Mostert. I think that he's a super efficient player, and he's had some really, really good weeks when he's been on the field. And again, the injury risk. But I think that sometimes people forget that, like, these kind of players, they have those boom weeks, and then they have, you know, the bust week that we really haven't seen too much because he hasn't played a lot of games through the season because of injury. I think like someone like Keaton Mitchell is also in a similar situation, but is significantly cheaper. And I think doesn't get enough conversation that like shows you just how much volatility there is in the market, where a guy can have string together 3 good weeks and you know, the usage is varied, but you're willing to bet that just, he's one of the super, super efficient outliers that will just continue to put up, you know, 25 fantasy points a game, which is just an unrealistic expectation. And I think a player like that within the top 10 in that position, especially with these aging vets in the top 10, kind of makes this position just super, super volatile, especially with when you add an injury risk.
Yeah, it's... I remember when Jonathan Taylor was a bust because over 3 weeks he had only posted like 100 yards his rookie year, right? Like it's so absolutely nonsensical at the position. Ultimately, here's how the game is played. And you and I were talking about this. It's great if you've got every tool in the world that'll tell you do this, do that. It's great if you believe that you have the player that you think you're supposed to own. But at the end of the day, it's just about getting it right. Because if you have the right player, if you have a performing player, the guy that had Austin Eckler in his rookie year, that guy hasn't had to do anything for years. He's just hanging out for years. The guy that drafted Alvin Kamara because he was a 3rd-round pick, and a lot of people faded him in the rookie drafts, and he went to RB3 or whatever, and he was pick 109, 110, 111. That guy didn't have to do anything for years. It's just a matter of getting it right. But everybody acts like there is some incredible science to this. Yeah, you have to go get tools that value, you know, over replacement or whatever. If you're unsure and you're running scared from a player week over week, I don't make as many trades as other people in dynasty leagues because these same guys are buying Devon Achain at an incredibly expensive price. And then when he strings together three bad games and they think that he sucks, now they're trying to flip him. And they're constantly playing this game where they're like turning over and turning over and turning over. It's like, just build one solid roster. And that's why wide receiver is just so much better, because you just know what you're going to get. The consistency is stronger. We know who these players are. They have boom weeks just like running backs do. I wish I didn't have to start running backs at all, to be honest with you. I'd rather play in a league with no running backs.
Yeah, I think the volatility for sure. Yeah.
I just honestly, Alexander, I just want to bitch about running backs because it's such a tiresome game. I have Rashad White in a number of leagues just because he was inexpensive. And it's like, I just needed somebody to perform and he had some down games. I didn't run because he wasn't performing well. And now here we are sort of approaching the mid of the year and it's turned around a bit. And his value has been a lot stronger across the span. And of course we talked about him to start the year. He was the RB 24 or 26 coming into the year. Now we're seeing him as high as what, RB 16. So he's climbed essentially 10 spots. We talked about this couple more good games. He's going to go ahead of guys like Tony Pollard. He's going to go ahead of, you know, all these guys are going to be casualties to the climb and, again, flippant nature that people play Dynasty in. CJ Stroud. We were talking about this a couple weeks ago. We looked at a number of indicators that said CJ Stroud was ascending. It was evident he was doing things as a rookie that hadn't been done. He looked poised. He made Nico Collins look infinitely more relevant than the year before. Now he's making Tank Dell look very good. Again, it's the cart before, it was the chicken or the egg, right? Like, which one is it? I tend to believe it's CJ Stroud in this case, but nonetheless, after the historic performance that we saw from him last week, a lot of these services are starting to turn the corner on Stroud and push him into that RB or that QB 6-7 range. But I'll say one thing before I pass it off to you, and we had already mentioned this. It's without question he is higher than Trevor Lawrence at this point.
Oh, absolutely. I think the efficiency metrics just alone, especially early on, I know that there was the, you know, Urban Meyer conversation with Lawrence, but as a rookie to, you know, set the number of completions without, you know, a record without completions without an interception. Obviously, this last week's game with 470 passing yards and 5 touchdowns, just the pure efficiency as a player, the pace of play, just he's got the game script obviously as well, kind of in his favor. But he's just an extremely efficient player that we saw these numbers even as a prospect coming in. You know, 96 percentile QBR. Yards per attempt, 93rd percentile, and everyone wanted to say it was his wide receivers, and we kept saying, no, look at how accurate he is as a player. All the charting stating how accurate he was. That's his strength, and now it's translated over to the NFL. He's a 6'3", 6'4", quarterback that can hit it on and in any place on the field, and now he's able to do it in a super efficient manner. There's not very many rookies that can start off this hot and do this well, and then topping it off with the rookie record in this last week's game. I think he's one of the most talented players really right now, young players at that position, and he's ascending a ton. And I think really what you can do now is like those, again, the question of like, is it Tank Dell and Nico Collins? Well, Nico Collins wasn't doing really anything up until this point with these other guys. If Nico Collins was a top tier player at the position, he would have been averaging 15 points a game, like he was, you know, like he's doing right now at this point. And Tank Dell as well, kind of an undersized guy. He's got a lot of speed, but again, like the efficiency, Stroud turned, was able to service three elite wide receivers. And then, you know, not that these guys are not that special, they're special in their own at Ohio State, but guys like Olave, Jackson Smith and Jigba, yeah, they could have elevated him, but look how good those guys look at Ohio State, and now look how the situation now looks in some of these guys in the NFL with, you know, subpar quarterback play. I just think the talent's through the roof. This is the kind of guy you want to invest in. And these are the kind of players that you, again, we talk about this, the analysis of the prospect, the talent evaluation of the player, people will be lower on these guys. And now then you'll have to start paying a premium with now him being what QB7 in Dynasty right now. When you could have gotten them in outside the top 10, top 12, you know, and not spend a super high premium on him. And so, yeah, you can look at positional value and stuff like that. Obviously, running backs are not performing consistently as wide receivers. But when you start analyzing these players, like at an individual level, and look at the correct metrics, like we talk about when we evaluate these players, you'll be able to find guys like CJ Stroud and see that, you know, the talent level that's there, that's what's available. And not every week they're going to give you these monstrous numbers, but you know that on a consistent level that it's going to still be elite.
I mean, people were being ridiculous about Joe Burrow not too long ago. We've seen this with a number of other quarterbacks. Herbert conversation has started here mildly. But one thing I want to say about CJ Stroud and this offense, number one, I totally agree on the Nico Collins thing. I think Nico Collins is a good player, but I look at it the way that I look at Garrett Wilson in New York minus Aaron Rodgers. You and I talked about it on an early podcast. Our rank with him and our projected fantasy points per game with our built-in standard deviation put him somewhere between 17 and 18 fantasy points per game or slightly more. He's playing with Zach Wilson. He was just averaging 14.1 after last week. I believe it's 13.9 with Zach Wilson. You don't think with Aaron Rodgers he's going to tack two or three more points when we already said that Aaron Rodgers is worth over four fantasy points per game relative to other quarterbacks? It's in the math. It exists. And the quarterback is what buoys everything. So when I see Nico Collins playing as well as he does, when I see Tank Dell playing as well as I do, I attribute that to how well CJ Stroud is playing. That's not an indictment against those guys because they play with CJ Stroud. That's their quarterback now. So you can hold that against them unless you believe that it's them. I necessarily don't, but you can hold that against them, but it's slightly irrelevant because they play with him. One point that I want to make on Stroud, though, is that currently on the year, when you look at deep ball pass attempts, this is PFF data, CJ Stroud is the QB19 in deep ball pass attempts. He is the QB3 in deep passing yards at 550. That's because his yards per attempt are number one in the league at 20.4. It's efficiency, it's offensive scheme, it's ball placement, it's getting the ball to guys for big play opportunity, guys after the catch. It's doing all these things that we've seen San Francisco thrive on in years after the catch. It's the system that we've seen other quarterbacks that throw the deep ball often succeed with. But the fact that the guy is throwing at a deep attempt rate of 9.7, which is less than Gardner Minshew, Trevor Lawrence, Brock Purdy, Jimmy Garoppolo, Joshua Dobbs, Desmond Ritter, and he is still, he's neck and neck in deep ball attempts as Zach Wilson and Kenny Pickett, for God's sakes. But he's number three in the league in deep ball attempts. And that is with Nico Collins and Tank Dell. And again, if you're going to convince yourselves that it's those guys and not Stroud, you're out of your mind. CJ Stroud, deservedly so. We look on Fantasy Calc. Let me sort to quarterback real quick. He is currently the QB7 behind only Lamar Jackson, Joe Burrow, Justin Herbert, Jalen Hurts, Mahomes, and Allen. That is a tough nut to crack when you look at that group above him. Lamar's playing great, and I don't even think we've seen this offense open up to the degree that expectation led us to coming into the year. I think there could be even more here. Burrow is rock solid. He's got great weapons around him, elite weapons. Herbert, obviously rock solid. I think that right now, Stroud being a top seven quarterback is justified, and I don't know how much higher he can really go. I think that it's going to have to take an injury. It's going to have to take weapons leaving some of these offenses. But nonetheless, not too long ago, CJ Stroud was QB 15, 16, 17, floating. A couple of excellent performances, and this is how far he flew. And we had talked about this, that the ascension was in the numbers. So it's great to see it validated. And again, don't forget how bad Houston was supposed to be. I mean, I'm honestly blown away by... I didn't think he was a bad player, but there's no way anybody saw this player coming. Like, year one. Now, you may have seen it year two, year three, whatever. Mm-hmm. To come out this soon and play this well is ridiculous, especially after last week.
Absolutely. I think it's very special stuff. And yeah, it's evident in validation within the process of just looking at the, you know, advanced metrics that make each of these players at their position special, and then which advanced metrics to lean on whenever you're looking at these guys.
Yeah, Stroud's playing amazing, but that leads us to talking about Tank Dell, because Tank Dell is a player that I know for many, they're questioning, like, how heavily do you invest in him? Is he for real? Is it a mirage? And I go back to the sense as we look at him here on Fantasy Calc behind DeAndre Hopkins at the wide receiver 43. It's not a mirage. I mean, we kind of can tell what he is so far, assuming that this doesn't stabilize more. He's very boom-bust with an incredible ceiling, and he's playing with a quarterback that's just still trying to figure himself out in the NFL. So it's hard to imagine things don't get better from here.
Absolutely. I think he's got the, you know, I think it's one of those things when you get these kind of players that, especially Stroud, who's already kind of, you know, has cemented himself in various formats as a top 10 player at the position. And obviously that the team will lean and build their offense around CJ Stroud. You want pieces of players that are impactful in those offenses. And if Tank Dell is going to be a big part of this offense, which it's shown already, you want these pieces of this offense because he's tied to CJ Stroud for at least the next 4 years. He's a big play receiver. You know, he may be smaller, but he's got speed. He's great against zone with 3 yards of separation. I think he's one of those players that easily could have those boom bust weeks, but he will win you games for sure. Especially maybe in best ball, he's one of those guys. You know, you want to, you know, temper a little expectations, but you want players and pieces of these like potential pass heavy offenses like Houston with CJ Stroud and Tank Dell coming in. Literally one of the biggest knock was the size, right? He had great college dominator, decent breakout age, a fantastic 92nd percentile college target share. He was a great player. The only problem was he's 5'8", 165. And some of these guys are saying, well, he's still super, super, super talented. So, and it's evident in the numbers that he's sort of a boom or bust guy, but when he hits, he's going to hit hard because tied to CJ Stroud, they're going to put up numbers.
You look at Tank Dell in 2023, 10 total deep targets. Again, this is PFF data, 213 deep receiving yards. That's top 10 in the league. He's got less deep targets than Jefferson, Flowers, Addison, Gabe Davis, DK Metcalf, Jamar Chase, and more deep receiving yards than every single one of them. So we're seeing a player that in his role in this offense can do some really special things. And if you play in best ball formats, if you're looking for a guy to throw in your lineup that can give you week to week a big performance, this is that guy. And I think he can only continue to trend positively from here because he brings sort of a non-redundant role to this offense. The other thing is at 165 pounds, I think he's the only player to have over 450 receiving yards in 7 or less games as a rookie. So they're both doing some historical stuff right now. I ran a query on this. I couldn't find anybody but Tank Dell. I think I have it up here somewhere. Right here. Yeah, Tank Dell. For single season from 1990 to 2023, and I actually said 160 to 170 pounds in regular season requiring 454 or more receiving yards in 7 games or less, Tank Dell. That's it. That's the only guy. So it's historical all around, and maybe all these guys are good, or maybe it's the fit with CJ Stroud, but we look at him currently on Fantasy Calc. He's sitting next to, at this point, Treylon Burks. I know that we had talked about Treylon Burks, and it's like he's going through the concussion protocol right now, and we're getting Will Levis. I think at this point, I'd probably prefer to hold Treylon Burks and see what happens with Levis. Because look, Tank Dell's already had some monster performances, but for some reason, he's still behind Hopkins. He's behind Quentin Johnston. He's behind, like, I think the market is saying, look, we know he's undersized. We don't want you to pull the rug from out under our feet, right? And I think that's what we're seeing amongst the crowd. So I don't know how much further he can go because I think people's minds are made up. Like, even if he has a monster performance or a couple monster performances, like, how far does he climb knowing that people already view Nico Collins as probably the alpha in this offense, and there's some questions maybe about the stability of Tank Dell with his size and the potential. Like, how much further is he really going to go?
Yeah, again, it's hard because of the size. 165 pounds. It's hard for, and you did that query as a rookie, and there's no other player that's done what he has done. I think it's just, again, you're kind of banking on an outlier. I would argue, though, that I think, like, it's really hard, you know, it's hard to state that, but then, you know, someone like at another position, you know, we talk about Achan a lot at being such a small player. And being so high at the position, I don't know why someone like Tank Dell really can't jump up there unless they think Nico Collins is the guy. But again, you've got him up here. Marquise Brown, I don't know how he's not as similar, if not the, you know, one for one, 5'9", 166.
Just those wheels.
Elite speed. Yeah, and then he's going to command, they've both commanded crazy target shares in college. And they're still, you know, demanding a significant target share here in the NFL. And both of them, you know, Marquise Brown with Kyler Murray are both tied to right now very pass heavy offenses.
Yeah, it's awesome. I mean, again, I love what we've seen. You know, it's crazy. Target separation, number 21 at the position. Obviously, we're seeing other premium production metrics. QB rating when targeted, number 8 at the position for Tank Dell. So a lot of things very favorable right now, which, of course, you love to see. And if you're an owner of C.J. Stroud, this is obviously more positive information for you, including Nico Collins. Now, you happen to be a resident local to the Kansas City Chiefs. And you've seen some of the ups and downs that have circulated amongst this team. I mean, you listen to local radio, and it seems like even the city themselves is starting to question, like, the dynamic nature, the process, the scheme, the weapons around Mahomes and this offense. Now, currently the QB3 averaging 20.0 fantasy points per game, but feels like he doesn't look exactly like him, his old self. Let's talk about the Kansas City Chiefs and sort of the offensive weapons in it, more focused on the wide receivers.
Yeah, again, I think Patrick Mahomes, the offense isn't as humming as it has been in years past, but I think it's evident by the weapons surrounding Mahomes. Mahomes himself is just a, you know, incredible outlier at the position. You know, he's one of the best ever, and especially in terms of EPA, no other player has been as efficient within his first, 7 years with EPA. So he's a monster, and he's extremely talented, but he can't do it all by himself, right? And evident in this last game, only scoring 14 points against that leaky Miami defense. I think the weapons around him are kind of subpar. I love Travis Kelce. He's, you know, again, another one of those potential outliers at the position tied to Mahomes, but he's 34 years old. Defenses are kind of, you know, keying in on Travis Kelce and forcing the Chiefs to kind of utilize the rest of these guys. Marquez Valdes-Scantling, known as just sort of a, you know, a deep threat decoy at this point. Sky Moore literally cannot separate. I believe he's like number, he's got target separations 27th, which is not bad, but he's not commanding a lot of targets, even with a significant snap share early on in the season. It's kind of dipped as the games go on. Again, I think it's evident, and a lot of other outlets will tell you that Rashee Rice is really the player that you want within this offense to, you know, kind of get the rest of the significant target share within this offense. And he's got a great profile with, you know, the size, you know, the college target share, and just the pure ability. It's evident right now. He's number 7th in target separation, his target rate. So his targets per route run is I think top 5 at the position right now. I think really the guy that you would want to own in this offense is Rashee Rice. He has the second round draft capital. He's shown early that he has the ability to, you know, separate and command a significant target share when on the field. And at one point, you know, he was, I think this game kind of nullified it, but he's on pace really for 694 receiving yards, which would put him third in an Andy Reid offense, which would put him right behind DeSean Jackson and Jeremy Maclin. I just think a lot of guys have a hard time adjusting to the Andy Reid offense. I think long-term, Rashee Rice is one of those pieces to own just because it's shown in the more advanced metrics that he's able to separate. He's getting targeted when he's on the field. And for reference, Tyreek Hill had 593. And again, he was kind of playing a running back punt returner role. But I think Rice is a very talented player to get a part of this offense. The rest of the guys, I think, are really just slot receivers that don't have the ability to separate. I think the one guy that's sort of the unknown that I would like to see a little bit more is Richie James, because he had such a good end of the year with the Giants. I think he's kind of been nullified with the Mecole Hardman trade and a lot of guys. I think really it's just, what do you expect? Which one of these guys do you expect to demand such a high target share? And we had this lengthy discussion a long time ago when we were at the, fantasy football convention out in Canton, Ohio, discussing really who would be a large target earner and what would those guys be looking like. So I think, afraid to say that Nate might have been right, but some of these other guys have not hit, and poor guy Justin Ross is just a piece of shit. So
okay, well, first off, I will say my quote was, I didn't think anybody in this offense that was a wide receiver was going to go over 700 yards. And based on your estimates, it looks like Rice may not. With that being said, though, and I've got the depth chart pulled up here, Valdez-Scantling, we know what he is. This is not even, it's really not even a question. Kadarius Toney, probably not going to hit at all. No other receiver that had done what he's done, got traded, had underperformed, been injured in any other offense, would you give them the time of day? But in Kansas City, everybody's like, maybe he'll be Patrick Mahomes' guy. No, he won't be. Sky Moore, that's falling off immensely. Mecole, we know what he is. Justin Watson, there's no ceiling left. Justin Ross. Now, obviously, I never had a lot of faith in Ross, but I did appreciate the persistent drumbeat of much of the fantasy community. What is this? Okay, that was the wrong spot to use it. I thought it would be something better. It doesn't matter. We'll bring it up someday. I'm glad I know it's there, though. The point is, I think Rice is the only player that I can confidently say I see him in this offense 3 years from now. Like, he looks great. Everything that he does is fluid. As you mentioned, target separation, EPA, quarterback rating when targeted, all these things are favorable. Yards per route run, top 10. The volume hasn't necessarily been there the way that it was for Tyreek Hill, but Tyreek Hill is an incredibly special player. That's why he went to Miami and turned Jaylen Waddle into a porcelain doll in the corner. The thing that I want to say, though, about the Chiefs is when you look at them over the last 4 years, this is really interesting. When you look at their rate of wide receiver targets, so I'm just going to cycle this. This is, let's go to 2023, but I've got this written down. So we're going to go 2023. I'm going to sort right here. You can see them. Where are they at? Wide receiver target rate. Oh, sorry. Hold on. Get to week 9. Sort. Boom. Sort to the bottom, and they are right here. So they're bottom 2 in the league. Okay, so the Kansas City Chiefs, since 2020, over the last 4 years, they were number 22 in wide receiver target rate of 54.4%, but they were number 4 overall in pass attempts. 2021, number 21 in wide receiver target rate, number 5 in pass attempts. 2022, number 31 in wide receiver target rate, no Tyreek Hill, number 5 in overall pass attempts. And here we are in 2023, they are number 31 in wide receiver pass target rate, but they are number 3 in total passing targets, as you can see right here. Here's the thing. I looked this up. They're actually targeting the wide receiver position at a rate lower than Chicago right now. Patrick Mahomes, since 2018, which we're going to essentially call his rookie season, because I want to bring this up too. For the people that don't know, Rice, when in college at SMU, had a deep target rate of 25.6% on 41 deep targets. So he was utilized deep. You look at him in the league now, 5% deep target rate, two total deep targets. Again, PFF data. Since 2018, Patrick Mahomes, here's his year-over-year deep ball target rate. 15.9%, 13%, 12.4%, 10.5%, 9.7%, which was last year. Now we're back to 10.8%. The deep ball, the rate of which has been immensely cut back. The targets to wide receivers have really never been there, but yet this is a team that continues to throw the ball at a top five level in the NFL. So I still want to link myself to good wide receivers in this offense, though the volume for him is low. Individually, if things start to click and the offense starts to go his direction, there is so much volume to be had. This isn't the theory of vacated targets. These targets exist. It's distribution of what already exists. And so I like Rice for those reasons.
Absolutely. And then you look at the other players. Again, you talked about MVS. He's signed through 2024. I mean, even if they let go of him, he's a $2 million cap hit, which I don't know if the team would jump off of him. So potentially move off of him in 2024. If not, the following year, obviously Rice still would have three more years of his contract, two or three more years of his contract after this point, if they keep him in 2024. And then this is also a team that's a candidate to potentially draft another player within this offense. But I think Rice has shown enough in his target rate and his target separation that he's a player that could see in the second half of the season an uptick in volume. But again, what that uptick in volume would be, as you've shown, is may not be as significant as others would like to say. And again, I think they played a game where they thought they could go a little bit cheap, and it was successful to winning a Super Bowl with someone like Juju. Obviously they signed MVS last year. But I think really the game now is they're either going to invest more usage in the talented player in Rashee Rice, and then probably throw more capital at the receiver position within the next few years, whether that's, you know, through the draft or free agency. But again, I think the targets are there. They're throwing a lot. I think maybe it's just that they don't trust him because he's a rookie. I've shown you the numbers of like what the best a rookie has done in an Andy Reid offense. The best a rookie has done was Deshaun Watson with 912 total yards, or no, that's receiving yards. And then Jeremy Maclin following it up with 773. So not a lot of guys do really well in their first year as a rookie under Andy Reid anyways. So Rashee Rice could be someone that you could potentially buy low. And then in this next season, if, you know, Brett Veach and the Chiefs continue to try to play this game where they go cheaper at the receiver position and try to find those little gems, that Rice may be a candidate to see a huge uptick in volume his second year.
I think it's a mistake for people to overlook, though, what has been done. So again, PFF, just based on this, top 20 in receiving grade currently between Devontae Adams and Chris Godwin. The other thing is you look at him, 8.2 yards after the catch per reception, which puts him basically number 8. But if you filter out these other guys at the top here who have hardly any targets, he's probably top 2 in the league on a after the catch per catch basis. Then you look at his total yards after the catch. He's number 9 in the league, only behind Nico Collins, more than Amon-Ra St. Brown. Bear in mind, Amon-Ra St. Brown has 74 targets. Rice has 40. 34 less targets, but more yards after the catch. I mean, I think that this is the problem. People are looking at his raw volume and saying, he's not garnering enough. They're not looking at, the Chiefs are trying to win a title. They're gonna run the same damn system out that works for them year over year. It's funneling through Travis Kelce. It's targets to the running backs. It's defensively, it's Mahomes just making the right reads. It's spreading the ball around. I don't see a single indicator here that leads me to believe that Rice can't make a large ascension going forward. It's in the numbers. There's nothing about Rice that isn't outstanding right now. And I think that needs to be illustrated for people, because again, I think that the problem here is people are just assuming, oh, he's only got 40 targets. Well, yeah, he's a rookie. There's a lot of guys in this offense. Just looking at the way you would look at Tom Brady. I mean, it's really the same thing. If Tom Brady would have got a rookie receiver, the guy would have like 78 targets by the end of his rookie year. And if he if he could succeed in that offense, then we would see him rise. And we've seen it before. So Mahomes is just, he happens to be good enough to not have to have receiver lock. He could throw it to anybody and be successful. So irrespective of whether Kansas City does add talent to this offense, you and I talked about a trade candidate, right? We might as well bring him up because he wasn't really on the list. But we were talking about, you look at the dysfunctionality in Atlanta. And we've seen this happen with Stephon Diggs. And we've seen this happen with A.J. Brown. Why not Drake London? Why not Drake London be the next guy that gets dealt so that they can sort of reset the clock and get that first round pick? Like, why wouldn't it be Drake London? He would be a great fit in this offense.
Absolutely. I mean, he's got the size that sort of the that wide receiver room is missing. If you really look at the wide receiver room as a whole, you know, Rice is 6 foot, 200 pounds. You know, MVS has got size, 6'3", but he doesn't play the position like a big play, you know, contested catch type of player. So I think there's it really outside of Kelsey and the tight ends, there's a need for a player that plays like that and it's got the size and to be able to separate on the intermediate routes. And I think that's where, you know, they thought that they could get the use out of Sky Moore, out of Mecole Hardman, and maybe just try to put a bunch of players that could do small little pieces of what, you know, what Tyreek Hill used to be able to do in this offense. But yeah, I think Drake London would be an amazing piece to add to there. And he commands such a, you know, a high target share within that low volume rushing offense. But he's obviously an extremely talented player that is probably, you know, down on a lot of people, especially with the injuries, the injury right now. And then the, just the pure usage right now in this Atlanta, this porous Atlanta offense.
I mean, again, and I just did this. If you're watching on YouTube, if you're looking or watching on Spotify, I just filtered to 20 season long targets and then sorted by yards after the catch per reception. Rashee Rice is number one now. That is how you fit data, everybody. So if you had a question how you do it, that's how you do it. That's like when somebody's like, this guy was really good from 2007 to this year. You're like, well, what happened in 2006? Like, that's a data guy. See a query like that. And they're like, what are you gating out? Like, what are you trying to hide back there? Anyway, so yeah, Rice is outstanding for so many reasons. It doesn't seem sexy on paper, but again, like, it might be a slow burn and he could end up being an incredible player who is tethered to the best QB in football right now, even though for whatever reason, it seems like there has been a moderate dip in his price as well. So, okay. We got one more wide receiver that we want to talk about. Now, it's really interesting because he's still being valued, I think, as a wide receiver one in many cases, but he certainly hasn't performed like one over. Well, okay. Technicality. You're going to get me on a technicality. 2022, Jalen Waddle, by the way, that's who we're talking about. 2022, he finishes the wide receiver 12. So, yeah, okay, you got me. In a 14-team league, though, he was a wide receiver two, right? Wait. Yeah, right, no, he would be. Okay, so he's wide receiver two. The point is, though, here's the thing. We're in a 10-team. Doesn't matter. Point is, as soon as Tyreek Hill showed up, the script on Jalen Waddle flipped forever. Everybody wants to continue to live in this world where Jalen Waddle saw 142 targets and say, that's the guy going forward. And I love Jalen Waddle. I think Jalen Waddle is a super talented player. But I have to ask you, at this point in time, what differentiates him from Devonta Smith? Like, where do they differ right now?
They really don't at this point. You've got these elite wide receivers, top three at the position, that are earning such a monstrous target share that they are, you know, seeing a significant dip in their their targets from the previous year. I think AJ Brown and Tyreek Hill are just on an absolute historic tear, both of them, in their respective manner, that they're the second guy in that offense, regardless of how talented Devontae Smith and Jalen Waddle are. They're just not receiving the same target share, I guess. And yet again, it brings up the question, you know, at wide receiver eight, according to Key Trade Cut, when will Jalen Waddle eat into this offense, especially with Tyreek Hill playing so well at 29 years old? And you said it before show, Tyreek Hill's got 4.2 speed. It's obvious that he's one of the freak shows within this offense. He's on a, you know, you're about to look it up here on what his massive contract up till he was a free agent until in 2027. So he's here through 2026. What does Jalen Waddle do, you know, and within this offense if Tyreek Hill drops down to a, you know, what, a 4.3, 4.4 speed? Is he still commanding such a large target share, especially with the investment Miami made into him?
Yeah, I mean, even Tyreek Hill in 2025, his dead cap is $22.6 million. They're not cutting him. And dynamically, he's not a guy you would cut anyways. He changes the game so much when he's on the field. Even if his target share slides back 8% in the future, he does so much to become a difference maker on the field that you're not in this rock and a hard place decision like, what are we going to do with Amari Cooper? What do we do? Like, we're, you know, like... He changes everything dynamically. So even at $11.3 million, I think he's still going to be better at 32 years old than most guys that you can get at that price tag. So it's really interesting to me because, you know, Waddle's a guy that we've talked about this before. Historically, on average, wide receiver twos in offenses, I believe, average like 111 targets. We talked about this. DeVonta Smith last year with his 136 targets was a historical outcome. But people have like put a virus in their own brain and convinced themselves that I want Jordan Addison. I want DeVonta Smith. I want Jalen Waddle. Give me T. Higgins. I want guys across from elite wide receivers. No, you don't. You want the elite wide receivers. These guys are fine. They're not getting 170 targets. They're never getting 170 targets. There will never come. Look at what happened last year with A.J. Brown and Smith, and look at what's happening this year. It is a fucking cataclysm, okay? This is how the last ice age ended, by the way, okay? 12,500 years ago. Look it up. Point is, it's crazy to me that people are willing to go to these extreme levels. Okay, so we talked about this before. You and I have a trade calculator that's coming up. We're not going to show it just yet, but we're using it pre-show to illustrate a point. And the point that we illustrated based on our ranking system, which will be available to you guys in the future, we looked at Jalen Waddle and said, why wouldn't we flip Jalen Waddle for DJ Moore Plus? And we were doing it based on keep trade cut. And in our system, well, on Keep Trade Cut, essentially, they're saying that you could get the equivalent of DJ Moore and Roschon Johnson for Jalen Waddle. In our system, we have Jalen Waddle and DJ Moore very close already. So you're essentially getting a monster plus where websites like this are convincing you have to add more. So it's just the difference between how we're going to rank people and how other people rank people. But the fact that we're seeing, you know, Jalen Waddle with the honorary wide receiver 8 position, and we're seeing DJ Moore at the wide receiver 21, when his situation could change forever. We're already seeing Drake May mock there, right?
Oh yeah, Drake May. It could be Drake May. It could be Caleb Williams. Who knows what happens? And then this offense completely changes. I mean, look how good he is right now. He has played with Fields. You know, when Fields is on the field, look at some of these games that he has had. And he's only 26 years old. And if, you know, if they stick to Fields and, you know, whatever they do, and they continue to feed DJ Moore in this offense, and it potentially gets better over time with whoever is at quarterback, DJ Moore is going to be a significant part of this offense. And he's shown to do it with whoever is at quarterback. If it is an elite option, why is DJ Moore at 21 versus someone, you know, versus Jalen Waddle, who's kind of tied to Tyreek Hill in this offense for the next, you know, 3 or 4 years? So
absolutely nonsensical, dude.
Yeah.
And I do want to say DJ Moore to me is the closest thing to AJ Brown in Tennessee that we've seen in a long time. Like, you have a guy that is unquestionably elite. Like, if you put every wide receiver above and below him, with the optimum quarterback, DJ Moore would go. I mean, let's just imagine everybody has the best quarterback possible. DJ Moore is probably more valuable than Cooper Kupp at that point, right? And he's amazing. I'm going to skip DK, better than Flowers, better than London, better than T. Higgins, Ayuk, Devonta Smith, Puka, Addison, probably better than Diggs because of the explosive ability that he brings to the table. Like, how far do you have to go? Like, do you get to Tyreek Hill before you go, okay, push? Like, he's so good by the metrics. And you're already getting such extreme variance from Jalen Waddle. Why would you hold him? Like, you're going to get the same outcome with DJ Moore, even with Justin Fields. And there is actually, like, relief in the horizon. There's no relief in the horizon for Jalen Waddle in Miami. I think that's just a fair assessment.
Yeah, and I think it's also evident here with Keetre Cut where you kind of see where people are looking at these players just at what they have done maybe recently versus like really kind of projecting what they are in the future in terms of dynasty. And I think that's sort of the difference of what, you know, our thought process and our setup will be with this whole set, you know, with our rankings and trade calculator and stuff like that, of like what we'll look and project is like, what will these players look like within the next few years, as opposed to where they are right now. And I would say still like Jalen Waddle, you know, the production, he's not getting the targets that he was getting the previous year. And DJ Moore is, you know, potentially even this year could get gets Fields back here the next week or so, and then all of a sudden his target share goes through the roof, and then he continues to perform at like the 18 points per game that he was doing those first few weeks with Justin Fields.
I mean, he's right. He's next to Christian Kirk. You can't find Christian Kirk in the rankings without like slowing down and like looking and counting and reading names, but he's neck and neck with Kirk. Like, it just doesn't makes sense on the surface that you're waiting for the script to flip that never will. And by the way, Tyreek Hill, the first year that he got to Miami, and I could pull this up on the screen too. The first year that Tyreek Hill got to Miami, pull this up, he was averaging 10.0 targets per game his first year in Miami. I want to do this because it's worth seeing, like, in reality. So pull up the targets. Come on, you son of a biscuit. Okay, 10. Can you see this? 10.
There we go.
Per game for Jalen Waddle or for Tyreek Hill. 6.88, so 6.9 for Jalen Waddle. And that was the first year that they played together. So let's fast forward because things had to have gotten better the second year that they played together. So we roll down here. And we look at 2023, and we go to targets, and we toggle per game, 10.8 to 7.4. So, again, it's three more targets a game that he's averaging. It's just Tyreek Hill is garnering such immense opportunity and volume in this offense, and it's not changing. So, go ahead and continue to convince yourselves that Jalen Waddle's this infallible asset whose opportunity is coming, but then also go ahead and ignore that Tyreek Hill is still smashing at nearly 30 years old with no end in sight and is signed until the end of 2026 and is an irreplaceable asset that, short of a catastrophic injury, is going nowhere. Like, he is going absolutely nowhere. And I would hate for you guys to look up in 3 years when Jalen Waddle is 28 years old and realize that you wasted your prime. That's it. That's all my take. That's my take.
Boom.
Boom. Well, thank you everybody for tuning into the show this week. Anticlimactic ending there. If you guys are listening on Spotify, Apple, of course, as we've mentioned before, rate and review the show, give us feedback. Tell me that I yell too much into the mic. Whatever you want to say about Alexander, he's not been very buggy recently. So big shouts to Alexander for fixing whatever was going on over there. Maybe it's just luck. If you guys are watching on YouTube, make sure you guys hit like. If you enjoy the content you've been seeing, hit the subscribe button. Join this growing community over here on this channel. Help us boost our broadcast visibility. DynastyRankings.com, of course, is still coming. We were talking about the trade calculator. Alexander and I have been demoing it. It's very close. And then, of course, in the description, the Discord channel, Again, it's a very active Discord with a bunch of really good members. If you have trade questions, dynasty theory, go hang out with that group of guys and gals and mix it up over there. So anyways, thank you guys very much for checking out the show. And of course, we will be back next week with, I'm sure, more barn burner analysis for all you guys. See you then.